Hello and welcome to episode 14 of the Boxing Podcast. We are sponsored by 32 Red. I'm your host, Dev Sarney, and with me is the king of boxing punditry, a man who's been in this game longer than I have been on this planet. It is, of course, Mr. Steve Lillis. How are you?
Ah, mate, all them intros are brilliant, and now you reminded me of my age, mate, my birthday last week, and I'm getting older and older, Dev.
Oh, wow. Happy birthday.
That'd be a belated one. But when you tell me I've been in this game longer than you've been on this earth, and it's most probably true, I'm wounded when you say it.
Is that actually factually correct? Like, how long have you actually been
in boxing? What year were you born?
You go first. Go on, give me your number.
April 1989.
Okay, so pretty much.
Years,
pretty much.
30 years this year, this month.
Yeah, wow. We're about the same there.
And I'd forgot about this. April the 15th, 1989, I started working in boxing.
Goodness me. And what was that, by the way?
I was working for the Daily Sport.
Oh, wow. No, wait. Daily Sport, isn't that the one that just used to have, like, naked girls on
the front? That's the one. But if you go... Mate, I was on the Daily and Sunday Sport when it was... You won't remember, Dev, because you were like you would have been in. You know, if your mum had shown you the Daily Sport when you were 6 months old, she would have been you'd have been put into care. Trust me. I was around the Daily and Sunday Sport when double decker buses were landing on the moon headlines and that sort of thing.
Goodness me! So you have been in the game a very long time, yeah. And a real honorary member of the Daily Sport. That's not about anymore, is it? Daily Sports.
Yeah, that's the Sunday Sport now.
Yeah, so it's all gone belly up. So what have you actually been doing with yourself, Steve? We've not been around for a couple of weeks. What have you been doing? America, wasn't it?
I shot off to New York for a couple of days. Took the kids to WrestleMania, which was it was interesting, to say the least. It's not my type of game, but it's really interesting the way they do it, the production and the promotion out there, and how fan friendly the event was pretty impressive stuff. And apart from that, I've been holed up in Manchester, you know, doing little jobs for you, Dev, for Frank, and you've had me out at gyms today, and it's been a good day today, and here we are recording the podcast. What a great end to it.
Exactly that. But talk to me about Lomachenko then. Lomachenko Crawler was last weekend. There's been a lot going on in boxing, but that fight has stood out to me in particular. What did you make of it? Or we saw what happened.
It was spiteful, wasn't it? I go back a few, when the fight was announced, I mentioned on this podcast that I'm a friend of Anthony's. I've known him a long time. I've worked with him on Box Nation. And as everyone, I can only echo that everyone else says that you go a long, long, long way to meet a nicer person. But it wasn't a fight I liked from the off. Lomachenko isn't just, you know, him or Crawford aren't just, he isn't just the best, in my opinion, pound for pound on the planet. He's also one of the most spiteful. He doesn't care who you are. He's in there to hurt you. And he did that the other night. I know Anthony, and I hope the people around Anthony get him to retire now. I know he wants to have that goodbye in Manchester, but I'd rather not see that, to be honest with you. You know, he's more than earned. He's earned his money from boxing. He's served British boxing fantastically. He's a great ambassador for the sport, and I don't want to see him anywhere near a boxing ring again. Lomachenko just gets better and better and better. You know, you've got to say he's already up with the all-time greats. I know he's only had 14 or 15, whatever his professional fights, but it's what he's achieved in that time. Has been nothing short of spectacular. And his amateur record alone, 3-9-7-1, I think it was. And he avenged that defeat a couple of times.
Yeah,
that's why he's got to go as an all-time great. I, you know, people were saying that was his best performance ever the other night. I don't necessarily agree because, again, I think he's beaten better fighters in the past professionally than Anthony.
I still think it was an unreal performance from Lomachenko. I thought it would go longer. I mean, Crawler is tough. He did those 24 rounds with Linares, who can whack a bit himself. And, you know, he was hurt, but Linares didn't look like he was about to get Crawler out of there. Lomachenko essentially did him with one big punch at the end there. And, you know, and Crawler was where he was on the floor, and it was it was very impressive from Lomachenko.
I just think that, you know, there's been other impressive performances. It was a fantastic performance, but I thought the night he made Walters to quit. Walters was hot at the time. That was a special performance. I think Roman Martinez was a good fighter. The way he'd done him in 4 or 5 or 6 rounds. You know, I think that was a fantastic, another magnificent performance the other night. Flawless, but I think there's been better even than that. And there could be better to come. I just hope we get the Garcia fight now.
Yeah, I think that's the one that the boxing world are hoping for. Well, Crawler was a big underdog last week, and this week we've got another UK fighter heading abroad as an underdog. We are in King Khan Fight Week. Amir Khan takes on Terence Crawford on Saturday night, live on BT Sport Box Office, and Steve Lillis gave him a call this week. We've got Amir Khan on the show. We hear from Barry Awad, aka Kid Galahad, ahead of his June 15th clash for Josh Warrington's IBF World Featherweight title. Fly flyweight or super flyweight or light flyweight, whatever you want to call him, Sonny Edwards is on the show, along with unbeaten super featherweight Archie Sharp, who talks us through his very interesting mind control techniques. It's another banger, and it's another episode of the Boxing Podcast. Enjoy. Saturday night on BT Sport Box Office, the King is back. Amir Khan takes on unbeaten pound-for-pound star and WBO World Welterweight Champion Terence Crawford. He's a big underdog, but does that faze Amir Khan? Absolutely not. Here he is with Steve Lillis.
Amir, thanks for joining us on the Boxing Podcast. And you don't take easy fights, do you? Terence Crawford, arguably the best in the world this time.
Yeah, definitely. You know, obviously, they've got him high up there as one of the best fighters in the world, pound for pound. Maybe the best in the world division as well. But, you know, I want to be in those big fights, and that's where I belong. When the fight was put to me, it definitely shined more than any other fight out there for me. For example, there was talks of the Kell Brook fight, which I was going to take. And as soon as this fight came up, I was like, I'll take this one in a heartbeat because it's just such a bigger fight and means more to me. Winning this fight would be awesome, and obviously, it just obviously would motivate me to try my hardest to win this fight, because at the end of the day, I know the skill and everything to win this fight. I mean, I look at Crawford's style, I think he's just made for my style. I look at his resume, the fights he's fought, you know, so I really believe that I've got everything to win and to gain in this fight.
When you look at his resume, is there anyone there who would have beaten you or who would have pushed you close?
It's hard to say, because the only person who he has beat in history was Prescott. Now, obviously, that was very early in my career, so you know, hard to say. But I know if I fought him again, I would definitely beat him. But other than that, I mean, it's hard to see. I mean, looking at Benavidez, looking at Jeff Horn. I mean, these are guys that would beat as well. So it's very hard to say. You know, if he's fought anyone, who would give me problems?
Why do you still think people are having a go at you for taking this fight? Because you had it with Canelo, and now you've got it with this fight.
You know what? I think people just follow the fact that I get the biggest fights when I want the biggest fights. And whenever I want a big fight, I always get it. This is another big fight, and it's probably on the world stage where everyone's talking about it. And I think there's a lot of jealousy in this sport, and I do see a lot of jealousy, and I see a lot of comments and stuff. I never let it get to me, but you do read things. I'm just doing what I love doing, which is boxing. I want to leave the sport and know that I fought everyone I wanted to fight, and I fought the best out there. To be in the position to fight the best is a very big thing, you know, and I'm in a position where I've had the opportunity to fight the best fighters in the world and to be in the same ring as them.
Do you think being, as we say, an affluent British Asian hasn't helped you with support?
I can't really say that, you know, because the British have really been behind me and supported me, so it's hard to say that. But look, I think what the Brits want to see is me winning and winning, becoming a world champion. That kind of frustrates a lot of the Brits, because they're not going to talent to become a world champion. They want to see me back being a world champion. So I think that's where it all goes down to.
When you look back on your career now, I mean, nearly 15 years, I think it is, since you won the Olympic silver. I mean, how proud are you of it, of what you achieved, even though there have been setbacks along the way?
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes people forget my career. My career's been up and down, but I've achieved so much in the game and come to America fighting out here, fighting the best out here and beating the big names, having losses. But I mean, out of the 37 fights, 4 losses, but against top caliber fighters, it can't be that bad, really. So really, I've fought the best out there. I've I've been fighting the best for the last 10 years.
How much do you love boxing now? I mean, is it hard to love it as much as you did when you first went professional, when you went through Bolton on that big tour after the Olympics? Can you still love it as much now you're in your 30s and, dare I say it, a veteran?
I mean, I love it to bits, man. I still love it to bits now, and I just love the training, getting in camp, training hard, getting shifts, sparring, working hard, then going to the venue, seeing the promotion behind it, and then fighting. I mean, you can't buy that. You know, that's something you have to achieve. And I've been in a position to achieve all that, so that's why I love it to bits. You know, and there's many fighters who would love to be in my position to achieve this, but you know, there's only a few who get picked and get chosen to be in this position. So I'm the one, the lucky one. I worked hard for it, and I'm just making the most of it while I can.
Do you still get excited fight week when all the cameras and all the press are around you wanting a piece of you, or has that become a chore now? I know you've always enjoyed doing your media work.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy it, but it's become second nature now, and I just deal with it with the right way, and I just really never really like it to me, but I just got used to it really, and I know that the media want their bit, you have to give them their time.
You had a couple of fights with Joe Goosen while Virgil was indisposed. What's it like being back with Virgil now in the gym?
Virgil's an amazing coach, and I'm glad I'm back with him again, because obviously he got sick, that's why I went with Joe Goosen. And now, leaving Joe Goosen and being with Virgil, I think things are going really well. I owe it to Virgil. You know, Virgil's been there for a long time, knows me better than any other trainer, and I think he's put that spark back into my training again. So it's great to be back with him.
Just going back to the Crawford fight, well, what strengths has he got that are going to cause you the biggest problems?
Obviously, he's quick. You know, he's a very technical, good fighter. And he's a very good boxer, but that doesn't mean I'm not a good boxer, you know.
Who's in the gym with you now? Is there any other fighters around you at the moment?
Well, we've got good trainers in the gym. Obviously, we've got Virgil there training, Tony Brady. So all camp is the same. Don is there as my assistant. And then you've got the boxers. You know, you've got Devin Haney, who's helping me in sparring. I've got some good sparring partners. Mike Dallas, who's pushing me. So I've got two, three different sparring partners that keep changing, keep getting a different look, different sparring partners keep coming and going. So, yeah, man, it's been quite good.
What's it like with Devin Haney, who's pretty quick as well?
He's quick, and it's always good to spar someone who's quick and young and, you know, wants to prove something. So it's been a great experience, really. It takes me back to my old days, you know, when I spar all the older guys.
Yeah.
And now he's like 21 and I'm like a 32-year-old. So I give him that credit, like, he's a tough young fighter, man.
What's it like being the old man of the gym?
You know what? If I still feel young, I still outrun the fighters, I still outbox the fighters, and I still train and outspeed all the young fighters. So, really, to be honest with you, I don't feel old, man. I feel young, man.
And how's it been taking control of your career over the last couple of years?
I've been more professional taking control of my career now, making sure that I'm doing everything right, everything that I want to do. I'm not being forced into anything. And it's better this way, you know. I've got my family, my man. I love being around my kids. So it's just great to be in this position now. And I'm enjoying every bit of it. And like I said, you know, I do say it's my final chapter. So I want to relax after this and see how I go. You know, this is the last couple of years now where I want to make the most of it and just enjoy life.
Have you matured over the last couple of years as a person since you become a father of a couple of kids?
Definitely. You know, everything I do is for them. Everything I'm doing now in boxing and everything I'm doing in my life. Is to give the kids a better life and give them everything they need, not to spoil them, but to give them a good living.
Well, after you finish boxing, what do you plan to do then?
Obviously, I want to get TV work, to talk boxing, be like a pundit. I love doing that, you know, I love talking boxing. I'm a boxing fan as well as a fighter. Other than that, you know, I'll just be hanging around with my family, really spending time with them, quality time with them, but I mean, I want to keep myself busy, do something, but I always keep in the gym, keep myself ticking over and everything else, and I always somehow be involved in boxing.
After this, do you think we're going to see the Kell Brook fight, or do you think that's gone now?
I think there's still a chance that can happen. Definitely, why not? I mean, there's still a big chance that the Kell Brook fight can happen. It just depends how this fight goes, and what Kell's doing with his career, and we just take it from there, really. We are with the same promotional company, so we just take it from there.
How upset do you think he is not getting the fight with you so far?
I don't think he's bothered. I mean, at the end of the day, he's got a lot of options there. So I don't think it's a big problem for him. He's very ambitious. But when it comes down to having a big fight, he never makes them.
But what happened with you the last time you saw him? There was some sort of thing that you had a dispute when you were both ringside. Did anything happen?
Nothing happened. I mean, we spoke and we said, look, because at that time I did think it was going to be him. So look, well, let's make that happen, let's be professional about it, and let's do it the right way. He said, yeah, why not, yeah. And obviously, started talking rubbish and talking trash and putting me down. And then that's when I got a call against Crawford, and I think he's a bigger fighter, better fighter, and I'm holding the table. So I took that fight instead.
If you win this fight, you're going to be in demand even bigger, more than ever, aren't you?
Definitely, you know, it gives me another big, another long lifeline again in the big fights. You know, so I think I'm always going to be in a position to have a big fight. Always, it's the style I have, the popularity I have. But it's all about then having a world title around my waist, and then I'm the belt, and then making sure I'm picking the right fights and the big fights I want, and maybe picking back money back. Maybe you're calling out front there, maybe you're fighting the likes of Spence. Some big names out there.
Maybe Conor McGregor will start boxing and call you out.
Yeah, you never know exactly. This boxing night can happen.
Do you think you're the most exciting fighter in the world?
I'm probably up there as one of the most exciting fighters. I'm not saying I'm probably one of the most exciting fighters. People like watching me fight, and that's why we've got a lot of these big TV companies, and they have big money to watch me and have me on the channel. You know, and I'm always getting the opportunity to fight on these big fights against these big opponents. So really, there must be something up there right now.
And before we let you go, just give us a prediction. What's going to happen when you challenge Terence Crawford on BT Box Office? What are fans watching at home going to get?
It's going to be a very technical fight. It's going to be a fight where both fighters are going to be, you know, it's going to be a game of chess at times. At times there's going to be a lot of explosiveness. At times there's going to be a lot of power, a lot of speed. I mean, it's going to care everything. I think it's a fight that the fans are going to look to watch. It is going to be non-stop action.
Steve, Khan is the underdog. Can he do it?
I can't see how he can win the fight. You know, that galls me to say that, because I've been a big fan of Amir ever since I saw him in the ABAs. I mean, when he beat Craig Watson, that was the first time I saw him. I just can't see it. I think Khan's CV is stunning. I don't go with the people that knock him. He's got a throwback CV. You know, fighters in the 50s and 60s had these records, but we're in a generation where you have more than a couple losses and people throw you on the scrap heap and you shouldn't be fighting at that level. But he's up against an elite fighter. To me, after Lomachenko, the best fighter in the world. I think Amir will cause problems for Terence Crawford in the first few rounds because, you know, he's still got, you know, the speed. He might have been... I think Amir's been a pro for about 14 years in July, which is a long time, and he's had a lot of tough fights in that. But his speed hasn't gone away, and I think it'd be like a lot of these calm fights when we see him got beat. I don't think it'd be as spectacular as the Alvarez fight, the loss, and as brutal, but I can see him in the lead, giving Crawford plenty of problems. But as his feet begin to slow, Crawford will get more in range, more comfortable. And I see Crawford getting the job done, coming from behind and winning about 8 rounds. But the writing will have been on the wall from 2 or 3 rounds earlier. I'd love to be wrong. Never wanted to be so wrong so much in my life. The last time I said that was in May 2016 when Amir fought Saul Canelo Alvarez. But, you know, all you can do is wish Amir all the best and make sure you tune in to watch the fight, because it's going to be a great night in Madison Square Garden. You know, is it Amir's last big night at the office? We shall see.
Well, Steve, the way you're playing out the fight there, talking about how Khan could be ahead in the fight, be causing problems to Crawford, but ultimately his feet will slow and then he'll get knocked out, essentially, is the kind of prediction there. Yeah. That sounds almost like for the Canelo fight.
Yeah.
But here's the difference. Here's where I'm coming from. Canelo weighed how much in that fight? 180 pounds or something that Khan said that when he went into the ring, so he was maybe 20, 25 pounds heavier than Khan on the night. Terence Crawford is a much smaller guy. Terence Crawford has fought down at lightweight. This is only his third fight at welterweight. Khan's been at welterweight since 2014. This is a smaller guy. This isn't a one-punch knockout artist. I could see where you can just about start making the case. Maybe Khan's got a real chance in this. Maybe it's not just going to go like the Canelo fight.
Yeah, he's not a one-punch knockout artist, and there's two ways you get knocked out in boxing: from the crusher KO men who can take you out with one shot, or the guys who throw from angles and you don't see the punch coming. And you've got to remember, you know, we've seen Amir before get knocked out quickly by Danny Garcia when he's got into range and made that mistake. Crawford will find a way to get into range and hurt him. Not with the brutality Alvarez is, but certainly to drop him and stop him.
Yeah, well, I put out this tweet earlier in the week. I was thinking about this. I was thinking about Khan's losses. That Prescott one, you know, he was a kid and he caught cold. He was, what, 21 years old, first fight on box office, and he thought he was probably a fighter that he wasn't, thought he was a big banger and tried to have a trade-up with Prescott. The second loss was Prescott. It was Lamont Peterson. He didn't get knocked out in that fight. It was a bit of a weird one with the ref and famously the man in the black hat and all sorts of silly stuff going on. And then the Garcia fight. Now, the Garcia fight for me was more about Khan underestimating Garcia. What do you think?
No, I don't think he did. I think he got in range, got careless, and got caught. Except, you know, what we do now is when he gets in range, you know, he got in range and got caught. Fighters now are getting range to Khan now, like Alvarez did, when his feet start slowing. Like in the Alvarez fight, Amir was boxing brilliantly. But you saw about a round and a half before that Canelo was getting closer, missing by half a centimetre, getting closer and closer. And although we see he's still got his speed, we've seen Khan struggle in fights, you know, in winning fights. The Chris Algieri fight, you know,
I think Algieri's completely changed his style for that fight as well. He was like this long boxer, and that's what he showed against Provodnikov, and then suddenly against Khan he was just a come forward, no nonsense fighter,
and it caused problems. And you know, Samuel Vargas dropped Khan, Amir won. There's just those little things that I just find the odds stacked against him. And it's the Prescott loss. I mean, that was just a mad week in Manchester. That was, I can remember that. I know we're going back a long time now. I remember Johnny Boss, the late great matchmaker in America, who's the supplier, shall we say. He used to deliver to order, shall we say. He was a bit like Uber Eats in boxing. And I remember about 2 weeks before the fight, he rang Dean Powell up and Frank Warren up and said, "Don't take Breedis Prescott." And I said, "Well, the trainer picked him." And then I remember Dean saw Prescott at the weigh-in, saw him a few hours later. He was 2 inches wider. A few hours later, he was 2 inches wider. And by the next morning, Frank Warren and Dean, fingers crossed, sitting on them come fight night. There was an air about they've got, you know, the trainer had got it wrong there.
Yeah, no, it sounds like it. Well, talk to me about Terence Crawford then. I mean, is he really that good? Is he really that guy? His CV at welterweight, as Khan mentioned in his interview there, Jeff Horn, he's beaten. You'd fancy Khan against Jeff Horn.
Yeah.
Benavidez, you'd fancy Khan against Benavidez. His welterweight CV isn't that great. It's Khan's is actually better.
He's only been there 9 months, you know, so, and it's up, you know, the bigger fights are out there for him. But when you've only been there 9 months, he's doing his best. I think Aaron would get all these guys in against him without a shadow of a doubt. I mean, the Spence fight is the one they've spoken up. And you know what? That Jose Benavidez stoppage is better than a lot of people think. He's not a bad fighter. The Horn one, yeah, I'd fancy Amir against Horn. But he's only been at that weight since last summer.
Yeah, very true. And I look back on Amir Khan's kind of the standout wins for me. And there was one against Maidana. That's the one for me that kind of stands out.
That is one of the, I don't care what anyone says, that is one of the best fights I've seen in Vegas. Yeah. And that is one of the greatest wins by a British boxer in America, given what Maidana subsequently went on to do. And Khan, if there'd been another 15 seconds in the first round, would have stopped him. Because Maidana was gone from that body shot and recovered and then almost won the fight in the last two rounds. You know, you've got to look at the Malignaggi performance was flawless before that. There was a time there in around 2010, 2011, before Peterson, where you can argue was unlucky. You know, Judah, Maidana, Malignaggi. I know Salita was a one-round blowout, but he's still done them. Kotelnik, just after Barrera, when I think them 2 years when Khan was a real special fighter. Since then, what one win that does look really good since then is the Luis Collazo win. I think he was really, really good that night. And the Devon Alexander win around 2014. But since then, you know, you look at the wins. Chris Algieri gave him a hard, hard fight in Brooklyn that night. I was there for Box Nation. He gave him a hard fight. We had the Canelo Alvarez lost. Phil LaGreco was what it was. It was Amir's first fight for nearly 2 years, just under 2 years. And then the Vargas fight, he won handily, but still had problems.
Yeah, he got knocked down in that fight as well. But yeah, I just feel as though people overlook that Maidana win, considering. But then you look again, and it was actually 9 years ago now.
Yeah.
And maybe the last time we saw a real blitzing Amir Khan performance, the real stud Amir Khan, was 2014, as you mentioned, Luis Collazo, Devin Alexander, and maybe we've seen the best of Amir Khan. And the version, it would need the 2014 version to maybe give Terence Crawford that real, you know, all he can handle.
But you know what? What a CV. What a curriculum vitae he's got. I can't think of a British fighter who's got one like it. I just want to be so wrong about this fight this weekend, because there's no one I'd love to shut people up than Amir Khan. And you know what? I'd want him on Twitter all day Sunday telling them all this. I would want to see him. I'd want him round the clock. I wouldn't want him to celebrate his win. I'd want him to sit in his hotel room, his kids on the lap, an iPad on, his iPhone on, and just tweeting and Instagramming and Facebooking everyone who told him he had no chance. I'd love it.
Absolutely. The one thing I hope is on, you know, Saturday night, late Saturday night, we're seeing the same sort of energy that we just saw last week for Anthony Crawler, where Twitter, UK Twitter in particular, seemed to unite and get behind him. And I'm setting my alarm. I'm doing this. Come on, Crawler, do it for the UK. You know, this is your chance. I hope we see all of that for Amir Khan as well. I think it would be a real shame if that same energy isn't there, because he's taken a riskier fight for less money. He had the Brook fight on the table for more money, which was, you know, Brook isn't pound for pound. Crawford is, and he's done that in an era where fighters are being, you know, lambasted online for taking, you know, lowest possible risk for highest possible reward, and, you know, navigating their way through their careers. Amir Khan has done it his way, and I hope he gets the rewards for that.
I hope he does. You know what? I think I hope he does. I don't think he's going to, because I've, you know, seen some of the stuff on Twitter. You know, Anthony was daring to be great against and Amir is, well, what are you doing taking him on for? So yeah. I hope that comes. I'm not holding my breath.
Final prediction on that then, Steve?
I'm going to go for Crawford in 9 rounds.
Yeah, I'm with you. I try to make the case for Khan. I think Khan will be ahead, but I think Crawford will get to him. But that's Saturday night on BT Sport Box Office. Let's unite. Let's get behind Amir Khan. He's a nice enough fella, and he's got an opportunity to shock the world. On June 15th, at the First Direct Arena in Leeds, Josh Warrington defends his IBF World Featherweight title against mandatory challenger Kid Galahad. It's unbeaten versus unbeaten. It's Yorkshire versus Yorkshire. And it's two Brits scrapping it out for a world title. It's one I'm definitely looking forward to. Well, my man Steve popped to the famous Winker Bank gym in Sheffield for a word with the unbeaten challenger.
Barry, we're in the Ingle gym. Tell us how long you've been here and your memories of it.
I've been here since the age of 12, 13 years old, and, you know, I've had some great memories in this gym. I've seen a lot of people come and go, and, you know, this is my home.
And you've seen a lot of people come and go, but has anyone stayed here as long as you? Was Nasir this long, or even Johnny Nelson?
No, I think Nasir Mohammed was here from the age of 7 or 8 and left at 21 or 22. I think the only guy who can match me is Johnny Nelson. And, you know, Johnny's been here since, I think, maybe the age of, you know, same age as me, 13, 14, till, you know, until he finished 34.
Not just about boxing, but how much about life have you learnt in this gym?
You know, this gym's made me from... I was a street rat, that's what you could call it. You know, now I'm a gym rat. You know, it taught me from, you know, being a, you know, a little rat on the streets causing trouble and stuff into a man.
Well, what life do you have away from this gym?
I don't really have a life, you know, that's it. My, you know, all I know is boxing, my DNA, you know, if you open me up, is boxing, nothing else. You know, I don't really have no other family, I don't have no other interests. All it is boxing for me.
Okay, when Dominic Ingle gives you a day off, what do you do then?
It's a good question. No, I don't know. I still probably pop in here because I only live across the road. But that's it really. I don't, you know, we don't really hardly have days off.
During your pro career, you know, it's been slow burning as such to get to this world title opportunity. Yeah. Have you ever been on Dominic's case, come on, I need this big fight, I need that world title fight? Because we're in a generation where the next batch of fighters coming after you are all being rushed into these situations.
Listen, boxing's it's not about, you know, how fast you get there. It's about getting there and staying there as long as you can. And, you know, everyone moves at a different pace. And, you know, I've had things what have happened to me and, you know, certain things. But, you know, I've stayed focused and I'm here now. So, you know, with this opportunity, I'm not going to let it, you know, slip out my hands.
What things have happened to you that might have taken you away from boxing?
You know, I've been banned, got banned in 2014. You know, I was out for 18 months. And then, you know, when I got back, you know, it took a while to get going again. But, you know, that's in the past now. We're here, 2019, you know, where we're closing in a world title. Well, we're here now. We're going to win this world title and then, you know, keep it as long as we can.
Well, during the build-up so far to your fight against Josh, you've been quite vocal in, you know, his dad will pull him out and the mental strength. Why is that?
I just believe, you know, stylistically, you know, I'm all wrong. You know, I think 15th of June, we're going to get in that ring. No matter what he says or what I say, you know, we're going to get in that ring and that IBF title's come back to Sheffield.
He became a dad a year ago and he has had two great wins since then. Yeah. But do you still think you've become the same man as a fighter once you have children? Because I know you haven't had children yet.
No, you know, I ain't even got a missus. I ain't got, you know, apart from boxing, I'm married to boxing. That's what I'd say. 2018, he had a great year. He had twins. We beat Selby. And then he went on to beat, you know, Carl Frampton. And they say good things happen in three, you know. 2019, you know, is my year. His looks ran out. So, you know, 2019, 15th of June, that title is going to get took off him.
Obviously, you're not going to overlook him or anything. You're not that daft. But I get the impression from speaking to you and Dominic, there's a belief somewhere. You might think this is an easy fight for you.
No, I don't believe it's an easy fight, you know. I just believe, you know, stylistically wise, he knows, you know, his dad knows, Frank knows, you know, he might be at this minute of time, he might be confident, you know, because he's gone on to beat, you know, Carl Frampton and, you know, Selby in his mind, who he thinks they're better than me. So, you know, at this minute of time, he might be confident. So, you know, when we get in that ring, he's going to soon realise, you know, he should have never took this fight.
Why are you better than Lee Selby and Carl Frampton?
I just believe, you know, I think when he boxed Selby, you know, you can't take away credit from Josh because at the end of the day, you know, he beat who was in front of him. I just believe, you know, the timing for both of them fights were perfect. You know, Selby was struggling to make the weight. And Carl Frampton, you know, Carl's not been in the same fight for 3 or 4 years. And, you know, I think the Selby win's a lot better win than the Frampton win, the Frampton fight. And I just believe, you know, he's fighting a strong featherweight, you know, in his prime, you know, 28, 29 years old. There's not going to be no excuses, you know, and I believe in his head, he knows what's going to happen.
And also, is it in your mind that it's took a long, long time for you to get there? There's been obstacles. Yeah. There's been having to fight on shows when they've been packing away the, you know, the seats and stuff. Because of your style and how you box, do you think you're the sort of fella, if you don't win this one, it'd be a lot so hard for you to get a second world title fight?
Yeah, 100%. You know, listen, for me, this is everything. So, you know, I'm going to leave it all in that ring. I'm going to make sure, you know, no matter what I've got to do, that belt's coming back, you know, because I know I'm not going to get a second, you know, second chance. I know Josh knows he can get a second chance because, you know, Frank, after I beat him, Frank's going to get him the WBO ratings. He'll probably fight Carl Frampton in a rematch and then, you know, Frank will offer them, you know, say, oh, the winner can fight Oscar Valdez.
What about yourself? What would you like to do after this fight if you win?
I'm not looking past that, you know. All I want to do is win this fight and then that's it, you know. For me, I don't care what happens, you know, on the 16th of June or anything past the 15th, you know. All I want to do is get in there and win this fight.
And how will you win this fight?
I believe I can win this fight in every department, you know. I just believe, you know, Josh, I think a lot of people just underestimate him, you know. When they look at him, he doesn't look the best, you know, but he does everything good, you know. He's not special at anything, and I just think people always underestimate him. They always say, oh yeah, but he's this and he's that, he can't do this and he can't, but he can, you know. And when they get in that ring and they realise he's better than he is, it kind of, you know, throws them off.
Why are you emotionless?
I don't know, just how it is, isn't it? Just one of them things.
Because you come across as emotionless, but you're not a cold person, I don't think.
No, listen, then they in this game, you know, we're here to win. We're not here, you know, to make friends or anything else. I'm just here to win. You know, I don't want to be friends with anybody or that's it. You know, I just want to win.
Do you have a lot of true friends?
You know, I've got a lot of friends in this gym. My life's very boring. So, you know, I'm always in the gym or, you know, training. I don't really have no social life where, you know, Josh has got a good social life. You know, he's got a family, he's got friends and all other stuff. I don't really have none of that. So it's just one of them things, and it's just, you know, if you want to be great and do great things, you've got to do things that other people don't want to do.
Do you think having a family and people, a lot of people loving you around, like he's got his wife, his kids, do you think that might soften him up a bit?
Yeah, I do. You know, I believe it's softened him up. And when we get in that ring on the 15th of June, he's going to realise it has softened him up.
Well, so there's a couple of things there, Steve, which caught my attention. There's this point that Galahad's making, that Dominic Ingle has made before as well. There's a feeling that Warrington now having this kind of this family life, people depending on him, this nice house, nice car, this level of success has softened him. What says you?
I don't think so, for two reasons. Boxing is littered with great fighters who have won their world title against the odds, made a successful defences and made good money. The hunger still be there. And the other reason is Josh Warrington knows what he wants out of boxing for the next couple of years. He's not going to hang around in this sport. I guarantee you that. He's only here for another four or five fights at the most, but he knows what he wants in that time. So he won't be going soft. Having a family might make him, you know, might have made him put in his mind, I'm not hanging around in boxing. That's what it might have done. As for softening him up, absolutely not a chance, not a chance in the world. He knows what he wants from life. He knows what he wants from boxing. And the only thing having these twins a year ago has made him think is getting out of boxing sooner. It hasn't diminished his appetite for the sport right now.
Well, let me ask you this then, Steve. With all of that in mind, who is the hungrier fighter heading into this fight?
You know what? I've been around. You've been sending me to these gyms polling fighters, and there's a few really interesting opinions on it. I don't doubt who's the hungrier, but Kid Galahad just lives boxing. He's got nothing else in his life apart from boxing. He wasn't just saying that in the interview. You know, he generally just walks over the road to the gym in Wingco Bank on his day off and has a look at who's sparring and who's in there. That's the life he leads. You know, he's got no children. He's got family. He's come from nothing. And when I say nothing, his family just about had the clothes on their back when he was a kid. So you can't doubt his hunger. But Warrington is hungry to keep his title and unify. You know, maybe not doesn't match Kid Galahad's hunger, but hunger doesn't always win your world title fights. It's game plans.
Yeah, exactly. And one thing I'll just mention on that, you and Galahad said as much there when he's given a day off. He was kind of thrown by your question about, so what do you do on a day off? He was like, I still come to the gym kind of thing. Like, he didn't really have any hobbies or anything. You've seen them. Warrington's, you know, a diehard Leeds United fan. He's got other stuff going on. But just on the Leeds United thing, did you see the face-off on the pitch the other day?
Yeah, and that was really good camera work by the guy you sent there, Chris Roberts, as well.
Shout
well
out done, Chris Roberts.
Yeah, well done, Chris, there. It was really interesting. And you know what? It was what the Galahad. I've interviewed Galahad a couple of times, but I've got to know him a bit more the last few months. Should we say? And I quite like him as a person, but you know what? When he was on there with that hood over Dominic Ingle in the background, filming it, he was just emotionless. Everything that was being said to him, he just didn't bite at all. He didn't care about the fans booing him, the you know, people singing Josh Warrington's name. He was absolutely emotionless. I think, he got the impression that you look at him in the face. You've been around him, Dev. You don't know what he's thinking. When I interview him, you ask him a question. Sometimes you look up at your subject for a clue and there's nothing coming back in his face that tells you what he's generally thinking. And I just think he took a split decision on the face off.
There is that feeling. And yeah, having been around him, I can't really get a read on him. He's only really said one thing to me. He asked me if I was Umar, IFL Umar. I had to confirm that that's not the case. I'm not Umar, IFL Umar. I'm not doing as well in a few departments. But he's an interesting fella, is Kid Galahad. Yeah. I think he's really hungry, and there seems to be a real lack of emotion behind those eyes, as you've alluded to before. And he wasn't phased on the pitch at all. He just stood there. But having said that, right, and I'm just thinking this through, at the press conference, you can talk about how he's emotionless and all that. He did kind of lose his tongue a bit. You know, all the talking was coming from Dominic Ingle, so maybe he does get phased. I don't know.
Yeah, I didn't think he was two-phased, you know, but Dominic, you know, was sort of taking the limelight a bit at the press conference, especially with all the booing going. And, you know, perhaps Dominic might have said to him, leave this to me. It's going to be hostile here today. I'll do that. He listens to what the Ingles told him. So, you know, maybe that was in their plan for, you know, we go on about Danny Garcia's dad doing a lot of the talking for his son years ago and taking the pressure off. All the talking that day was done by Dominic to ease the pressure off. Because there was a lot thrown at Galahad that day. I mean, it must have taken the wind out of his sails when John Rawling threw the drugs question at him straight away. It was a question to be asked. You're entitled to it. It's a fair enough question. But it's not the sort of thing you expect to come from the top table at a press conference. Maybe from a journalist who's trying to get his lines. We're in a huddle afterwards that they don't want to let out at the when it's the top table speaking.
Yeah, no, John Rawling was relentless that day. It was a hell of a press conference. And I think it's going to be a hell of a fight. It's June 15th at the First Direct Arena in Leeds. Tickets are on sale via Ticketmaster. And it's a big night. There's going to be some undercard announcements very soon. Expecting some really good fights on there. From what I've heard, there's going to be some good fights. So it should be a good show.
And going back to the fight, just one last thing on it.
Go on, Steve,
I wouldn't mind getting on the podcast in the next week or so. Cool. I spoke to Billy Joe Saunders about the fight today, and he has a really good take on it. It's only, 3 minutes of it. Be great if we could play that next week.
Yeah, we'll play it. We'll play it. I know he's picking Galahad,
He goes into why as well. So
okay. Well, there you go. There's one for next week. We'll be hearing from Billy Joe Saunders. On Saturday, April 27th at the SSE Arena, Wembley, charismatic super flyweight sensation Sonny Edwards returns to action. He takes on Portugal's Pedro Matos in a defence of his WBO European title live on BT Sport. Now, Sonny is quickly becoming known as one of the best talkers in the game, especially down in those lower weights. So we sent Steve Lillis to, talk to him.
Sonny, you looking forward to getting out and making it win number 11 at Wembley Arena on the 27th of April?
That's the plan. You know what I mean? That's always the plan going into it. It was a bit of a frustrating end to the year, even though I had them two good wins. The injury put me off and set me off. I should have been on the 8th of March card in Royal Albert Hall, which would have been a great platform. It should have been a big TV fight as well. So that's frustrating. But we're straight back on it, and after this I'll be going straight back into camp as long as everything's well and I'm healthy and looking to get an early late summer date.
You say, you know, it's a bit of a blow having the injury, but the momentum's still with you, because they were magnificent wins against Ryan Farag and Granados, weren't they?
Yeah, and obviously they're my two biggest wins. I took two hard 10 round fights in 7 weeks, in the space of 7 weeks, and I come out shining. I think both of them, I got good praise from real boxing people. My promoter Frank Warren, happy with the performances, how I carried myself, before, after the fights. I'm flying at the moment.
You go on social media quite a bit and you put yourself out there. So what was it like shutting a few people up with those two wins last year?
Well, yeah, I banged the drum a hell of a lot, and I'm the first one to admit that. But it's just because I want these proper fights, I want these proper opportunities, and I've taken two that a lot of people are sort of saying, why is he taking these fights at this stage of his career? And that's because I believe in myself that much. I'm not just sort of, shouting these names to, get like a headline or build up my following. It's because I genuinely want these fights. I haven't mentioned a single fighter's name that I'm not willing for the phone to ring the next day and me to take a fight.
Your brother Charlie's WBC flyweight champion, he's confident as well. So you, where do the pair of you get this confidence from?
Like, we didn't just fall into boxing, we've been doing this, you know what I mean? I'm 14 years deep into this sport. Like, people forget that. I started when I was 9 years old. I've entered every single national championship from the age of 11 to when I turned pro. We're both feet in. We're not sort of, but it'll be good if boxing works out, but we've got stuff to fall back on now. We've dived in from a very early age. Been independent since I was 18, I'm 23 now. Boxing's all I've ever done. We're climbing up the ladder and we're building names for ourselves, but we're far from making it. For obviously Charlie's close to, sort of cementing financial future. Obviously he's still not there yet and there's a long way to go. I've always felt from an early age, and I believe he's the same, that we're made for something different. I don't want to, if I can help it, be working a job all my life, working for someone else. And some people are happy in that lifestyle, and that's great, and that's great for them. But for me and for Charlie, we believe we've got a talent. We've worked at it and we've nurtured it, and now we're trying to reap the rewards.
Are you the Croydon Klitschko's?
Yeah, the mini Croydon Klitschko's, something like that. We're just trying to pave our own way. It's one of those things that, even though he's at a higher level now, but we've got similar careers going on, similar paths, we're walking them very differently. Obviously, you just got to look at our different promoters to say that. it weren't until 12 months ago that we was training with, like, in completely different cities. Obviously, Charlie's up now in the Steel City gym with me, and he's shining since he's been here. No, even though he's my brother, and I'm so proud of him, and where he is now is where I do want to be, I'm still paving my own way. I can still do it on my own. You know what I mean? I'm not looking for no handouts off the back of him. So I'm still trying to make my own name. But yeah, it's great to have a brother doing it, doing everything alongside with.
With your social media presence, do you think being the flyweight where they don't earn the money of a weight is another reason you put yourself out there so much?
Maybe, but I'm also quite outspoken. I think anyone that knows me in my personal life, I'm also like that. I'm very much a wind-up character. And a lot of what I say is tongue-in-cheek, and it's not meant to be taken as seriously. Obviously, if someone's just reading something I've written, it's, you know, sometimes hard to grab the sense of humour behind it, but all of that's irrelevant. Yeah, flyweights are not, it's not the biggest division. If anything, it's the smallest, you know what I mean? But we're building enough of a profile and name, you know what I mean? We're obviously not getting paid like the heavyweights, but we're earning good money, do you know what I mean? We're not sort of slaving away 10 rounders for a couple of grand, you know what I mean? We're earning good money, we're happy where we are. We've got good sponsors that provide and support us financially as well as other things, you know what I mean? And we've had good friendships with. And I feel like if you're too sort of closed mouths and you don't really have any personality or express your personality, it makes this boxing game very, very hard in this day and age, because your fighting you need the fighting, but if you've got a bit of personality and a bit of something about you, it takes to that next level, because people sort of, they want to hear what you're saying as well as just watching you fight.
Another fighter in the Frank Warren stable you have a bit of back and forth with is Lyndon Arthur. I've seen you going at each other on Twitter. Tell us about your relationship with him.
Do you know what? Lyndon was always jealous. He was on GB for longer than me, and I got moved up full time. And obviously we're similar weight, so there was always a bit of back and forth. Nah, Lyndon's a very, very good friend of mine. Lyndon Zelfa. It's just our sense of humour, to be honest. Like, even the lads in this gym are always ripping each other. Maybe you see it more of Lyndon because I don't see him as much as the lads I'm close with in the gym. So, yeah, we're ripping each other on social media every now and then, but we always show each other love. We support each other's fights. We travel down to the cities that we're fighting in. So it's all love, do you know what I mean?
Do you ever get offended by anything said to you on social media? Or do you ignore it because you might leave yourself up with some of your wind-ups?
Nah, do you know what? Yeah, and anyone that knows me and knows me personally can vouch for this. You see, if someone gets me and gets something good, I laugh and I find it hilarious. I love it that someone's spending their day, you know, sort of typing away at me. Like, the Farag build-up was just a perfect example. I had so much different angles of stick, and so many people that was giving me stick for the whole 6-7 week build-up of that fight, who now, after that fight, wish me good luck for my fight. Do you know what I mean? Because people want to see you get beat, but then when you don't, and they invested into a fight, then they become a fan. Do you know what I mean? My body of work was obviously impressive enough to win over quite a lot of people that was really wanting to see me get knocked out before.
How is it? Are you coping up here training with your mum battling illness?
Obviously, it's been a rocky road for the last few years. But when I'm in the gym, there's nothing that happens outside of these four walls. When I'm hitting a bag, when I'm on pads, when I'm sparring, I'm in showtime. Then I'm not Sonny Edwards then, per se. Like, so any of my worries that I bring to the door, they really do get left on the door, and I can't stress that enough. And that's probably a blessing for my, like one of my personality traits. Because when my mum first fell ill, it was a month before my senior ABAs, and I put on those weights. I didn't train for 2.5 weeks, and then I ended up entering them sort of against Grant's advice. He said I was going to pull out and go for it next year, because, to be fair, I was basically on weight before I went down to London when mum first went in hospital, and then 2.5 weeks every day in hospital, obviously hospital food and McDonald's at midnight and you know what. And then I got a call saying the weigh-in for the first rounds in 10 days, but what's your weight? And I was 58 kilos, and I was boxing at 49, so that's 9 kilos over. And come back to Sheffield the next day, trained 2-3 times a day with Grant, and we got the weight off and weighed in. Luckily, we didn't have to fight on that first day. I think we had to fight something like 6 days later in the Yorkshire finals, because if I fought then, a strong wind would have pushed me over. I was so weight drained, because, you know, losing 9 kilos in 9 days is not healthy, and it should never be done.
And going back to your boxing career, where do you see your weight settling at? Light fly, super fly? Because your brother's like cleaning up the flyweight division at the moment. He might have all the belts by the time you want to go there.
Yeah, then I have to start calling him out, won't I? I've been boxing at super flyweight, but I'm confident in my ability that I've been taking these good super flyweight fights, you know, Granados, Farag. But I'm not a super flyweight. I make the weight quite easy. If anything, I take the light piss more to bring it down more, just try and hold some strength at this weight. But really, I'm a flyweight. I don't really see me ever getting down to light flyweight. Not that I couldn't, but the only sort of draw would be a world title. And if they can get a world title or light flyweight at some point when I've been campaigning at flyweight for a bit, then yeah, maybe that's something we'll look at. But in the next 18 months, 24 months, though, I should be fighting for world titles. That's the plan for my promoter, for my management, from everyone. So that's what we're looking at.
Any of the world champions you're looking at flyweight?
Obviously, I think in 18 months, 24 months, when I'm going to be there, I'll probably be a whole different set. So I'm not really looking at them too much as if they're getting the ring of them. Obviously, I've been a sparring partner twice and should have been three times, but I was fighting Granados for that Artem Dalekane, who's WBA. They obviously wanted me over again, so that I think that shows how well I was doing. Great fighter, obviously Moriti, the IBF, I think Charlie's got his eyes on him. He's old now. He's got some great wins on his record. He beat Casemiro and Tete in a row, stopped them both. So he hasn't lost in 10 years, and I think he lost to Nonito Donaire on a cut. I think he got stopped on a cut in the fifth round, and he won the last two rounds going into that. So he as well, Tanaka's very, very talented. I haven't seen too much of him, but he looks very powerful and a boxer as well. Like them Japanese, they are. And obviously, Charlie Edwards completes the set. So at the moment, I'm not saying I'm looking to push any of them. I'd sooner get in the ring with someone like Donnie Nietz, who's obviously the super fly WBA. I think he's a fight there. If somehow it come round to me getting offered that sooner rather than the 18, 24 months, it's definitely something I'd consider. But the main thing, the reason why I'm not calling for any of these world title fights is because once I win the world title, I want to defend it and I want to hold it and be a good champion and sort of bounce from title to title and then look at the big opportunities and sort of have all the marbles like that. So even though I think and I know that on my day of proper preparation, I could get in the ring with any flyweight, any super flyweight in the world and cause them enough show. I'm not saying I'd beat every single one of them, but I'd cause them a hard time, you know what I mean? And it'll take a lot for him to beat me.
In the meantime, domestically, there's still fights out there for you. I mean, there's Jay Harris, and is the Paddy Barnes fight still possible?
I was sat down with my management on Saturday night at the Liverpool show, and I was just speaking. I've turned a corner now. I'm not in the business no more of calling people out because, you know what, if I'm honest, I don't need to. I'm in a very, very good position. You know, I've got a clear progression of where my career is going now for the first time. I've sort of pledged my future and I know where I'm going. So I don't need to be calling these fights out. If they come to me, then if someone actually wants to step up and fight, then albeit. But calling these fights has got me absolutely nowhere because I didn't call for the Farag fight. That fell onto my lap, even though they tried to avoid me the year before when I did want the fight. That fell into my lap. And Granados, obviously, I didn't call for that. But so it is getting me nowhere mentioning these names because I genuinely want to fight them, and I don't know, maybe the confidence that I'm sort of showing there, it puts them off. But yeah, Jay Harris, great fighter. If he fights for the European title, obviously I can't box for that, so that just puts another, you know, sort of stepping stone there. But if he doesn't win, then who knows, that could be out there maybe for a British title or something. And yeah, I don't know about Paddy Barnes. I've seen that he's vowing to carry on fighting, but I think it's obvious he would never get in the ring with me. Off the back of his last two performances, he's been exposed very, very openly, and I feel sorry for him in some ways because it's not nice, you know, of his age. He hasn't really got too many ways back. I mean, like, if I lost now, you know, I could regroup, and I've got years ahead of me. He hasn't really got that, so him rushing for titles didn't work twice, so I don't know where he goes. If the fight ever got offered to me, 100%, you know what I mean? I'm not in the business of turning down fights. I don't turn down fights. But like I said, I don't think Paddy Barnes would ever get in the ring with me. And I think that's very, very clear. I don't think his trainer would ever put him in the ring with me, because obviously Danny Vaughan used to train me. I've spoke to Danny off the record, and I know his opinion on it. So, you know what I mean? He's not daft. He knows what would happen if I fought Paddy.
And finally, you said you know where you're going. Where are you going?
All the way to the top, hopefully. And if not, I'll get to the highest level I can and keep fighting there. Do you know what I mean? I love boxing. I don't see myself doing anything else. I wouldn't be surprised if I was still having to move around at about 38, 40 years old. I love the game. I don't think I take too much punishment. So as long as nothing untoward happens to me, you know, in or outside the ring, I'll be in this game for a long, long time.
Steve, we've had Sonny on a few times. He speaks so well, and he can fight, can't he?
He can really, really fight. You know, someone who's only had 10 fights, you know, the Ryan Farag performance for me was something special that night. You can say what you want, you know, Ryan Farag is domestic level, but still a former European champion. He's had a good wins on the road, Farag, to win the European title. That night, that was most certainly one of the most flawless performances of recent times. I think of performances I've seen in British rings personally that have really impressed me. And, you know, you go back to Flanagan Magdaleno that night was incredible. And Sonny Edwards that night, and he's just getting better and better. He's only 23. And you know what? I don't think there's a rush for a world title. As he says himself, it's all about winning it. You know, I don't think he can do light fly. He says he can for a world title. But you look at flyweight and super fly, the divisions he's around. He says he's going to come down to flyweight. What a big ask to even win a world title at the moment. Of course, his brother's got the WBC belt. That is an app happening. The WBA flyweight champion, Artem Dalakhan, he sparred with twice. He's an incredible fighter. I think I'm pretty sure he's unbeaten. Muratti Muthalani, the IBF champion, he might be ancient, but he hasn't lost for about 10 years. And the WBO champion, Tanaka, we don't know a lot about him, but what we do know, he's only had 13 fights and he's a three-weight world champion. And when you look at the super flyweight, when you got Jurwin Asajas and Shriskat Runvasa, the WBC champion, you've got Khaled Yafai, the WBA champion. No disrespect to Khaled, but out of the seven available world titles Charlie could look at, that would arguably be the easiest. And the WBO title that's now vacant, I think Nietes has given that title up.
Yes, he has. Well, and you know, one thing that's been on my mind is the whole Paddy Barnes fight. That was being talked about a little while back, and well, Sonny now thinks the Paddy Barnes fight is dead. It's never going to happen, is it? It's gone, hasn't it, Steve?
It looks like it, but you know, you never say never. I mean, what else is there for Paddy Barnes now? He's had two heavy losses. What is there for him? I mean, if he wants to get back in any a good level, Paddy, the only fight for him is Sonny Edwards. And you know what? You could still sell that fight because two would go back on social media. It still works for me. It still really works for me. You know, I'd like to see it take place in Belfast where Paddy would have the support. I think that still works for me. You look how Sonny Edwards and Ryan Farag sold their fight on social media.
Oh, this would be much bigger than that, even with those losses.
You can make these fights something on social media. Dave Allen's made a career out of his fights through using social media. I think Sonny Edwards, Paddy Barnes shouldn't be consigned to the trash bin on your computer yet, Dev.
Well, I'll hold out hope and congratulations.
And it's easy to make as well. It's easy to make.
Well, and yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope we see it. And congratulations to Sonny as well, who signed a new deal with Queensbury Promotions. I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot more of him on BT Sport. He's back in action April 27th at the SSC Arena. And another boxer in action that night. Another pure boxer, another stylist, a slick boxer. 14-0 super featherweight Archie Sharp. He's back in action. Well, we sent Richard Hubbard to the Amigos gym in Kent to pay him a visit.
Last time we spoke to you, wasn't that long ago, and you reported that you were recovering from an injury / condition, which you were working towards getting ready for April 27th at Wembley. Progress, looking at your training, looks like you're doing okay, but progress report, please.
Yeah, it's going well, thanks. So like I say, 27th April, we're back out, and everything seems to be in good shape, so looking forward to getting back in the mix of the big fights.
Eight-rounder. Yeah. Is part of you thinking, after coming off such a big personal fight last time, part of you thinking, I want to go again into another big one?
Yeah, 100%. I'm gutted. I'm not in the big fight in April, but it is what it is. I just got to get on with it, get back healthy, fit, and ready for the big fights in the summer.
I suppose it's one where you've got to be a little bit sensible and be careful not to overlook anything or take anything for granted.
Exactly that. I just got to go in there on the 27th. I know I've got a job to do. I'll just work on what I need to work on and get in and move on.
Also, since we last spoke to you, the British title has been defended again by Sam Bowen against Jordan McCrory up in Leicester. Have you taken anything from it, had a look at it?
I'd be lying if I said I even watched the show. I haven't seen any of it. I owe Sam, obviously, one. So good luck to him, so he'd done what he needed to do.
Shocking, yeah, actually, not watching the show when you're divisional rivals.
Yeah, exactly that. Well, like I say, it's just I can't remember, I was Saturday, I was out with the kids, so it's the last thing that was on my mind was boxing then, so.
Did you find out the score quite quickly, or the result quite quickly?
Do you know what, I think I found out on the Monday when I come into the gym. Honestly, I wasn't even, like I say, the fight's going to happen at the minute. I've got a job to do on the 27th of April, so I don't need to go around studying Sam. I've seen Sam, I know he's a good fighter, so yeah, I haven't watched it.
Right, I'm going to turn back time here, Archie. Something we haven't discussed is a element of your preparation, which I think is fairly unique to you. I haven't heard of many other British boxers who employ these techniques, and is of mind coaching. Now, it plays a big part for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, of course. Like I say, my mind is so strong now because of my mind coach, Linda Keane, who I work with. I see her before I turned pro and I was in a bit of a bad place towards the end of the amateurs. Things weren't great for me, so I see her. So now I do mental health side of things as well, so I go and do workshops with young kids and adults just to talk about mental health, and because it all plays a part. And yeah, like I say, for that Woodstock fight, my mind was so strong, and as you can see, I got the result that I knew I was going to get.
Can you explain how it works in practical terms?
So basically, what I do is I just program things into my mind of what I see, and I won't go into too much detail because it is my secret weapon, but basically I just make sure I'm in great preparation physically and mentally.
Is it a case of, say, motivational tapes on a loop, that sort of thing, while you're running or on the treadmill?
Yeah, basically, like I said, I get programs made for myself for them particular fights, and I use it with everyday life, with everything. Like I said, I do the mental health side of things as well. So it's just all about my mind being in a strong place, in a good place.
How much did that help you? Because you, in some sorts of ways, you stepped into the unknown in the Woodstock fight, in the fact that you had someone in your face, he was hostile, he thought he was going to beat you, and he started maybe giving it a little bit of lip at press conferences. Did it play a part in giving you the mental strength to sort of overcome that? Or just ignore it?
To be honest with you, I was mentally in control from the first press conference all the way to the end of the fight. I've always, even when I was coming back at him a little bit and we was at the workout shot, public workout, I was always in control. Even though they was trying to talk me and get on my case, I was never out of control. I knew exactly what I needed to do. And like I say, when I come into that ring on fight night, I was so zoned into what I needed to do, and I got the job done.
How much part of your week does this mind work take? Is it an ongoing process? Is it once a week, once a month, when you need it?
I use it every day. Like I say, I use it for everyday living. I use it with my kids. I use it with everything. So I constantly work on my mind every single day. So no one realises how powerful the mind is, and I use it to its full potential. So,
is it something you'll employ throughout your whole career as an ongoing process, or is it maybe something you'll take into later life just to give you strength of mind?
Yeah, of course. It's something I'll do every single day for the rest of my life, and helping other people with it. I think it's a great thing. No one realises how strong it is, and it's incredible to see what you can do when your state of mind is so strong.
How much of your day does that side of things take up?
I just use it when I'm driving, and I just make sure I'm positive all through the day.
I must say, from knowing you for a couple of 3 years now, I mean, your confidence and stature does appear to have grown. Does it feel that way to you?
Yeah, 100%, because I know what how good I am as a fighter, and I now believe it every single day. I mentally believe it, and I know exactly where I want to be at the end of this sport, and I know where I'm going in the next 18 months. I've got a little plan, so I'll be at world title fights.
Within 18 months?
Within 18 months, I'll be at world level, mixing with them big top fighters, yeah, for sure.
How much has the winning of that first belt fueled you?
That's the thing. Now I've got my first belt, and I watched the fight back plenty of times, and I know I'm 100%. There's loads more to come. That wasn't me at my best. I've done what I had to do that night, and there's so much more to come. I'm looking forward to showing everyone and all the fans how much more there is.
I mean, that was your breakout fight, so, I mean, it is supposedly the first of many.
Yeah, definitely. It's my first big step up. I handled it well. I thought I won by a lot more than what the scorecards had me on the night. It was supposed to be, I was the underdog for that fight. And I knew that I was going to win that fight, and I did.
This cunning plan for the next 18 months, is there any way you can let us in on it?
Just keep winning. Once I get this fight out of the way, from now on, as long as everything goes right, no injuries and everything, I'll be in big fights and constantly title fights from now on.
Does the British title appeal greatly?
Yeah, of course, that British title fight's going to happen for sure. I keep saying it, and I know Sam's going to want to have it at some point. It makes sense. It's just a matter of when it will happen. It could be at the end of the year. It could be next year. No one knows, but it's definitely going to be on the cards.
Yeah, it's going to be a great fight. I'm looking forward to it when it does happen. But at the minute, I've got my plan, what I need to do. So I'm going to stick with MTK. They manage me well and my team. So yeah, we know exactly what we want to do. Now it's just about kind of on doing it.
Interestingly, last time we spoke, you quite randomly threw in the name of Lee Selby. Is that something that's been on your mind, something that just tickles your fancy?
Yeah, they're definitely fights that I want, and I know I'm ready for them fights. Obviously, for business side of things, I know he probably ain't going to be interested in it, but I know that I'm at that level and beyond that level.
Do you look at his style? I mean, he's a pure boxer, isn't he? And that's your game. How would the styles mesh into a fight like that?
I ain't just saying it, but I don't feel like there's any fighter out there who can just get back on the back foot and try and outbox me. I really don't think there's a fighter out there who can outbox me.
Another one, a name that you've thrown out there yourself occasionally, not so much recently, but it popped up on social media a little while back. Ryan Garcia. What's the story behind that?
Yeah, Garcia is a good fighter, they're the fights everyone's talking about, the fighters everyone's talking about, and I know I'm great and I can be amongst them fighters. I know he's gone up to lightweight now anyway, so at the minute it's not going to be happening. I'm staying at super featherweight, and I'm going to clear that division up before I go up first. So.
Any chance of you following in Garcia's footsteps and becoming an Instagram world champion? I mean, it's done him the world of good, hasn't it?
Yeah, he's doing well, but I like to do my talking in the ring, do you know what I mean? I want to be in the big fights, and I'll do my talking in the ring, and I'll win them.
How's life changed for you? I mean, you come from this sort of young prospect, now you're a father, your own place. It really counts now because it is your living, isn't it? You've got to put food on the table.
Yeah, exactly. This is my living. This is what I've been doing since I was seven. But now, like, I've turned pro and it's an everyday thing. I love it. I enjoy it. I enjoy doing what I do. I love the sport. And I'm looking forward to going on doing big things.
Do you think people are actually properly aware of your amateur background? Because you've stepped out before an Olympic cycle, people maybe don't appreciate what you actually won, where you travelled to, who you fought during your amateur days?
In my amateur, I think it plays a big part, yeah, for sure, because like I say, I won, I think it was off the top of my head, I think 7 or 8 national titles. I beat Olympian fighters, like I say. So I've been amongst the best amateurs, and I'm a great believer that great fighters all come from a great amateur background, do you know what I mean? Ricky Hatton, Floyd Mayweather, they're all great fighters and they all come from a great amateur background.
Finally, Archie, I'm going to drop you down a weight and ask for a prediction. We've got Josh Warrington defending his world title, IBF world title, against Kid Galahad in Leeds on June the 15th. Your prediction, and how do you break down that fight?
Well, I must say, Warrington has been doing really well at the minute. I didn't expect him to beat Frampton how he did, so he shot me there. He's a good, great fighter. Kid Galahad's also a great fighter. It's going to be a good fight, looking forward to it. If Kid Galahad can stick to his boxing and keep him away, I think Galahad on points. But if Warrington is just too strong and roughs him up too much, then I think Warrington can end up stopping him.
Which one's going to happen in your opinion?
In my opinion, I'm going to go with Kid Galahad.
Really?
Yeah, I'm going to go with Kid Galahad.
Now, Steve, there's an aspect of that interview I found very interesting. The whole mind control angle and like speaking things into existence and all that kind of stuff. What do you make of it?
You know what? To me, I'm not a professional sportsman, but I've never been like, you know, do mind games really make a difference? You know, I'll go back years. Remember Steve Collins and Chris Eubank with the hypnotising and all that sort of nonsense. not nonsense. Steve says it worked for him, so I shouldn't call it nonsense. I apologise to Steve there. As far as I'm concerned with all this sort of mind games and strength for mind, if it works at a fighter, I'm not a believer in it, but if it works at a fighter, and it, to them, in their mind, gives them some sort of advantage, embrace it.
And talk to me about Archie Sharp against Sam Bowen, then. That's a big one down the line, isn't it?
It's a great fight. There's a lot of great fights at super featherweight between fighters that are in the Queensbury promotion stable. And, you know, Archie beat Leon Woodstock. So he really deserves that shot at Sam Bowen. Before, I know Leon and Sam is big because of the local rivalry, but, you know, in all fairness, it's Archie who deserves that shot. I mean, you know, Archie hasn't boxed since October. I don't think it's a title defence at Wembley. But after he has his fight at Wembley, why not make that fight? Get on with it and let's make it, unless there's something bigger in the offing for Sam Bowen.
Yeah, no, it'll be interesting to see if that does get made. It's one that I want to see. And actually, we did a poll. There was a poll that went out as well as to who people would think would win. And actually, Archie Sharp, they've got ahead of Sam Bowen on that poll on Frank Warren's Twitter page. So very interesting.
Very interesting, that, yeah. Because he's very good. I remember early in his career, you know, having him on Box Nation, being impressed with Archie in his early stage of his career. And he's just got better. It just seemed that, you know, he went about his business very quietly. And, you know, because, you know, Zell for Barrett and Leon Woodstock were the ones getting the hype. And he was sort of always the third one behind them when it comes to a mention. But he's more than proved himself now that he's above both of them.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that performance against Leon Woodstock, it was superb. And he says he was nowhere near 100% in that fight. So I'm sure Leon Woodstock would say the same thing as well, by the way, that he wasn't at 100%. But
Archie won the fight.
Archie won the fight, and yeah, let's see these guys thrown in together. It will be very interesting. So Archie Sharp will be back on April 27th at the SSE Arena, Wembley. There are still some tickets available for that big show headlined by Daniel Dubois against Richard Laty. And I'm getting more and more hyped about that fight, by the way. I didn't know anything at all about Richard Laty, other than he'd only lost once and it was via injury, and it's just what it said on BoxRec. But now I'm hearing Richard Laty say things like they've been feeding Daniel Dubois baby food, and I'm sort of, you know, premium African steak, and, you know, things like that. I love it.
I tell you what, he's got plenty to say for himself. Yes. As well. I was reading some of the press releases for someone who's been finally in the book and boxing arena and the seconds out boxing gym. He's plenty to say for himself. And yes, he's my kind of man. I can't wait to get him into Britain next week, have some fun with him.
Yeah, see him at the press conference. The best thing that he said for me, so that was a great line. But I love that he said, no, Daniel Dubois is not the next Anthony Joshua. I am the next Anthony Joshua. He kind of bellowed it like that on the phone to our man Richard. But yeah, amazing, amazing stuff. I'm looking forward to that. So that's the
headline. It'd be nice if we get him on the pod next week, actually, to shout yes. all this.
Well, let's try. Let's try. If he's going to be around, certainly, let's try and get big Richard Laty from Ghana, the fighting city of Accra, onto the podcast. Yeah, I'm hyped. I've seen some of his knockouts now. You know, the YouTube footage isn't the best. It's sort of grainy. It's sort of shot behind someone's head as well in the audience. And you can just about make out what's going on. But yeah, it's dangerous. It's a trip into the unknown for Daniel Dubois, but you'd expect Dubois to win and then go on and, you know, whatever he's going to do. That fight with Joyce has been ordered as well. So there's a lot going on. So it's a big show. April 27th, Sonny Edwards is back as well, who we heard from earlier on in the podcast. Jack Cattrall gets a run out before his world title shot against Maurice Hooker coming up later in the year. And Lerone Richards against Tommy Langford as well. Steve, give me a quick line on that one.
That is the fight out of all of them that's got me sort of captivated as such. It's a terrific card, but that's the fight that I'm looking forward to more than anything, because Tommy's moved up a weight. He's had a couple of thrillers at middleweight for the British title, and now he's gone up. And Lerone, he's one of those people. I'll go to that gym, Alan Smith's gym, and for years he's been the one they've been talking about as the superstar, the man who's going to be this, that and the other. And we've only seen glimpses of it. So it's the time for him now to show up and show us that he is for real.
Yeah, and also, by the way, on the undercard there, I think we're going to see a statement performance from young Zach Chelly. He's 19, 20, 21 years old, 6-0, also in the super middleweight division, and he's going for the Southern Area title. And I think that's a fight down the line as well. You know, Zach Chelly, Lerone Richards, their paths could well cross, both with the same promoter. One of them's getting a bit of hype, one of them has no hype required. And hopefully they do get matched up. They're both in separate fights on April 27th at the SSE Arena, Wembley, and it's live on BT Sport. It's one we're looking forward to. Well, Steve, these last couple of weeks I've been away, I've been thinking, you know, one thing's just plagued me. It's troubled me. I've wanted to know. I've needed to know. What are you talking about, Lillis?
What am I talking about? And I'm not even going to rant. And it's all down to you, Dev Sahni. It's your fault.
No.
You sent me to Ricky Hatton's gym. You said, go and see Ricky Hatton. Go and see Billy Joe Saunders. Go and speak to Ben Davison, Billy Joe Saunders' trainer. And go and see Tommy Fury, if he's about. And if Tyson's there, speak to him. I've got 4 out of 5 there. Tyson's having a couple of days off before he starts some really serious training. But I interviewed them all. They was all a fantastic help and were willing to do it. But you know what? When I was there, I saw a kid called Shabazz Massoud. A 23-year-old featherweight from Stoke. He's called the Maverick Spar. He's 4-0. Very few have heard of him. This kid is special. His feet his footwork was something else. He's got defensive skills. The sparring partners couldn't get near him. He was the best unknown I've seen in a long, long time. And that is why I'm in a good mood. But next week, I'm not going to be in a good mood and someone's going to cop it.
I hope you told Frank about this kid. So let's, yeah, it sounds very good. If I've seen you tweeted about it as well, and it went up on your Facebook as well. So clearly impressed, Steve Lillis. So what's his name?
His name is Shabazz the Maverick Massoud.
Good nickname as well. Sounds like my sort of fighter. Well, it's been another week. It's been another cracking show. We are back. We're back. We've done it again. And this weekend, it's Amir Khan. It's his chance to shine. He's the underdog. You had Crawler heading into Lomachenko land last week. This time, it's Amir Khan heading to the USA as the underdog against pound-for-pound star Terence Crawford. Can he do it? Steve doesn't think so. But he thinks he'll do well, don't you, Steve? I mean, I did you a bit of a disservice there. You think he'll do okay? And then...
I think he'll do okay and get beat. I think he'll be leading on points, but the right one will be on the wall for a few rounds before he gets stopped.
Yeah. And I've tried my heart out to make a case for him. I've looked back at those, you know, the wins over Maidana, the Collazo win 2014. But I just can't. I think Crawford could well be special. So I agree with Steve. It's going to be one of those where perhaps Crawford catches up with him. But it's an exciting fight. I can't wait to watch it. It's this Saturday night. It's live on BT Sport Box Office. Can King Khan rule the world? Let's find out. Remember to tweet us any comments at Steve Lillis, at Sonny Dev, and at The Boxing Pod. We'll be back next week.